We're in the middle of this series that Matt pointed out, God is. And last week we looked that God is holy. We called it God is moving. We looked at Isaiah chapter 6 and we saw this picture in heaven that God brought Isaiah up into his presence and he revealed himself. And we saw that God is drawing people to himself. He's revealing himself. He's making himself known to people. We saw too that God is in the business, if you will, for lack of a better word, of forgiving the guilty, for forgiving those who recognize their need to be forgiven, those who recognize their need to be healed, to be set free, and God is healing them. We saw him touch Isaiah. And then we saw that God in his holiness and who he is, this is who he is looking for people to go and tell others about who he is. So as a child of God, as someone who has experienced God's grace, his mercy, and his forgiveness, and I taste of it every single day in my life, in some form, many forms. It's important for me to know who he is. In part, it's important for me to know who he is because he has called me, he has given me the responsibility as someone who has been forgiven, as Isaiah was cleansed, he's given me the responsibility to go and tell people who he is. I can't do that unless I know who he is. Right? I can't go tell people accurately, this is who God is. This is his character. This is what he's doing. This is what he's offering. This is what he wants. I can't do that unless I know that myself. I need to know it for myself. I need to read each day and I need to spend time in God's word. I spend time with him. I talk to him. I look for him. I watch for him and the things that he's doing in my life because I need to know who he is. It changes and shapes me. And I need to know that because he has called me to go. He's told me to go tell the people in my life, wherever it is that he leads me, to tell them who he is. And I can't do that unless I know who he is. The book of Isaiah is an interesting book. It's a big book. It's a challenging book. It's a book of judgment. And at the same time, it's a book of love. Of God saying, this is who I am and this is what I'm going to do. In the middle of the book, I think it's, let me not misquote. It's in the middle of the book where he makes this statement. It's chapter 46. He says, I want you to remember this and I want you to fix it in your mind. I want you to take it to heart, you rebels. Remember the former things, those of long ago. Think back of what history has shown us, how God has shown up and what he's been doing. I am God. And there's no other. I am God and there is no other. I am God and there is none like me. I make known the end from or at the beginning, from the ancient times what is still to come. And then he says this, and this is, I quote, I say, I'm quoting God. God says, I say, my purpose will stand and I will do all that I please. So the book of Isaiah gives us this picture of God's judgment and his stepping in to his creation when his creation is in rebellion to him. And we see it's an interesting book because at first you might think God is like schizophrenic. Because one chapter he's talking about how wicked people are and he's right. And then he talks about what he's going to do and who he's going to use to do it. And then the next moment you see this soft heart of God come and say, but I love my people, I love my creation, and so I'm going to do this. And then the next chapter or two chapters later he's back to executing judgment and holding people accountable for their lives and for their choices, people and countries. We come to chapter 40, which Jeff read from a little while ago, and in verses 1 through 9, God is setting up Isaiah to communicate to his people. It's interesting, in chapter 39 is where we see Hezekiah. So you want to say, well, what's the context of this particular part of Isaiah? Well, it's the people of Israel, the people of God, and their leader is messed up. They have a messed up government, and things aren't going well. They have a very selfish leader, and we see that in 39, and we see Isaiah doing what he was doing there. And then we come to chapter 40, and God speaks to his prophet, Isaiah, and he says, comfort, comfort my people. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem. Proclaim to her that her hard service has been completed. A season of difficulty has come to an end, and that her sin has been paid for. It's been covered. And that she has received from the Lord's hand double for her sins. A voice of one calling in the desert, prepare, the way for the Lord. Make straight in the wilderness a highway for our God. Every valley shall be raised up, every mountain and hill made low. The rough ground will become level, the rugged places a plain. And the glory of the Lord will be revealed, and all mankind together will see it, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. There's a near and a far here. There's an immediate within just the lifetime of these people that God was going to show himself to be powerful. His glory was going to be seen, and how he was going to move in these different nations, and what he was going to do for his people. But some of you also recognize the words here that are spoken again. They're quoted again in the Gospels, speaking of Jesus Christ, God coming to earth and making himself known to mankind, and all of mankind would see his glory. And we saw that in Jesus Christ, did we not? We did. And we're going to see it again. We're going to see it again in an even bigger way. And so he says, get ready, these things are going to happen. I have people in place that are going to do these things, and it will happen. Because men are like grass, people are like grass. What does that mean? Well, their glory is like the flowers of the field. They have a season. They come for a time. The grass withers and the flowers fall because the breath of the Lord blows on them. Surely people, the people are they're grass. They come and they go. They have a season. They're temporary. The grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of our God stands forever. You who bring good tidings to Zion, go up to a high mountain. You who bring good tidings to Jerusalem, lift up your voices with a shout. Lift it up. Don't be afraid. Say to the towns of Judah, here is your God. Here is God. Here's what he looks like. This is who God is. So verse 9 or verse 10, we begin to see this description. We begin to see this picture of who God is. And the first word in verse 10 is what? See. So that implies something, church. We have to look. You have to open up your eyes. Some of you are very tired. Some of you are about ready to take a nap, and God bless you as you do that. Some of you are hungry. Some of you are distracted. Some of you have things on your mind and on your heart, burdens, issues, things that we're facing, things we're walking through. All of those things can cause us not to see, not to look into the face of God this morning and see what it is he wants us to see. See, the sovereign Lord comes with power, and his arm rules for him. See, his reward is with him, and his recompense accompanies him. He tends his flock like a shepherd. He gathers the lambs in his arms, and he carries them close to his heart. He gently leads those who have young, that is, the sheep that have young with them. He leads them at a pace that they can handle with their newborn lambs. Who has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, or with the breadth of his hand marked off the universe? He's asking us a question. Who do you know that has done that? Who do you know that can do that? That can take the volume of the water, the oceans on this planet, and measure them by his hand? Who do you know that can take his hand and use it as an instrument to measure off the size, the scope, the boundaries of the universe? I can't even measure a piece of wood with my hand. I have a tool that I have to use. I have a tape measure that I have to pull out, and then I have, with my eyes as best I can, to get close enough and see the little marks. And I use a tool just to measure the length of a piece of wood. I'm not that person. I'm not the one that can take my hand and measure out the size of the universe and then tell you its size, how big it is, the dimensions of it. Who do you know like that? Who has held the dust of the earth in a basket? The picture there is this idea of you can actually hold it. You could take the mass of the earth and have it in a container and hold it in your hand. Who do you know that can do that? And no, Atlas doesn't count. Who do we know? The question is, who do we know that is capable of doing that? He can hold the dust, or he or she can hold the dust of the earth in a basket. Who can do that? Or who is able to weigh the mountains on a scale and take the hills and put them in a balance? Who has understood the mind of the Lord? Who gets him? Who can think like him? Who can get inside of his head? I can't even get inside the head of my wife. And I've tried. It's changing. That's my answer. It must be just changing all the time. I can't even get in the head of a friend or another person. Who can get into the mind of God and understand how he thinks? Or who is able to instruct him and tell him what he needs to do? Who do you know that God has come to and said, oh, I've got this problem and I don't know how to handle it. I really need some help. And that person says, here's God, this is what you should do. Do you know anybody like that? Who did the Lord consult to open his eyes, to enlighten him, to give him something that he didn't have before? Who has God gone to teach him the right way so that he knows what righteousness is, that he knows what holiness is? Who was it that taught him knowledge? Who gave God the knowledge that he has? Who showed him the path of understanding, which way to go? Surely the nations are like a drop. All the countries, the groups of people, the tribes, they're just like a drop in a bucket. When you put a drop in a bucket full of liquid, the drop just, it disappears. It doesn't even have significance. They're regarded as dust on the scales. He weighs the islands as though they were fine dust. Lebanon, which was known for its forest, for its trees, its cedar trees, it's not sufficient for altar fires. There's not enough wood in that forest to light enough fires, nor are there enough animals enough for burnt offerings to honor God. There's not enough. We don't have enough resources to honor him the way that he should be honored. Before him, all the nations are as nothing, and they are regarded by him as worthless, less than nothing. When you take, the picture here is when you take a scale, the wording in the Hebrew is not that they're worthless to God, but it's the idea that you put God on one side of the scale and you put all the people of all time, all the nations, all the superpowers of the world, and you put them on the other side of the scale, and God's over here and the scale is down, and you put them on the scale, the scale doesn't even move. It doesn't go, not at all. It's nothing. There's no comparison. When you take all of man's accomplishments, you take all of the things that we have created and built, and all the power that has ever existed in all the nations and countries and tribes of history of man, and you put all that power, all of that significance in the other side of the scale, and it doesn't even budge. It doesn't even register. To whom then will you compare God? And what image will you compare him to? Well, as for an idol, and we've done this for almost from the beginning, we hire someone, a craftsman, he casts it, a goldsmith overlays it with gold and fashions silver chains for it. We make these images, we make these idols, and say, well, that's God. That's the image we'll compare him to. Verse 20, a man too poor to present such an offering selects wood. So this guy can't do the gold and the silver and the fancy idol. He'll just make a little carving out of wood. And he tries to select wood that won't rot, that will kind of last for as long as he wants it to last, maybe his lifetime, at least for him. And he looks for a skilled craftsman, one that he can set up an idol, one that it won't. And it almost feels like there's humor here. He just tries to make a little idol that won't fall over. You know, he wants the craftsmanship to be good enough that it's a good solid piece of wood, there's no rot and termites in it, and he just wants it not to fall over. And maybe there's a little humor here. Maybe there's a little mockery, righteous mockery of saying, who are you going to compare God to? How are you going to make an image, make a some kind of idol, some kind of thing that you say, well, that's God. That's who we're going to compare God. That's what God looks like. See, he builds a case, doesn't he? And he gives us just, I think someone said already this morning, we just get a little glimpse in this text. We just get a little piece of the big picture. But it's a big enough piece that it leaves us with a sense of God is so big, God is so powerful, that, you know, when it comes right down to it, it really is ridiculous that we try to make these little idols and we say, that's God. It's ridiculous to make a golden calf and say, that's God. It's ridiculous to buy a television and put it in your living room and say, that's God. Or buy a car or a relationship, whatever it might be. Because I know what we're thinking. I don't have any idols in my house. I don't have any little images that I paid someone to make and then I lay flowers at it and I burn incense to it and I say, that's my God. No, I don't. But I have other idols. I have other things in my life that I look to and say, well, that's what gives me protection. That's what gives me significance. That's what makes me important. That's what's providing for me. That's my source of joy. And the case that God makes here is that that's ridiculous. And here's the point, is that God is without equal. He's without equal. The answer to all those questions is there's only one person. There's only one being that can do those things. And there is no one else that can come close. There's no one that can even approach. We can't make the scales even budge. With all of our accomplishments, all of our power, all of the things that we have done as a created race of human beings, you put it all in the scale and it doesn't even budge the scale. It doesn't even come close. Because there is no equal to God. Some of the things that I saw here in those opening verses that we just read, he's gentle. Did you catch that? I love that he opens up with the shepherding part of God's heart. See, seeing God in his bigness and in his power is not to make us just lay on the ground and go, oh, I can't. That's not the intent of God saying, I'm bigger than you. We saw last week Isaiah went, I'm undone. And he recognized his sinfulness. And immediately God sends one of his agents. The seraph goes over and takes the coal and says, you've been forgiven and you've been atoned for. See, that's God's heart. It's not about us just kind of hiding in the corner and being afraid of God. It is about recognizing that there is no one like him. There is no one like him. And a part of who he is, even in the context of his power, is that he chooses to be a shepherd. He chooses to love and care about people. Did you see the imagery there? And the tenderness that he has towards these sheep? He's bigger than any problem we have. If he can do those things, if he can weigh out the ocean, if he can measure the mass of the land, he can measure the size of the universe with the breadth of his hand, I'm here to tell you, he can handle any problem that I'm walking through. Now, my problems feel bigger than the universe sometimes, just straight up for me. And I think probably for you too. You walk through certain things and you go, well, this problem's bigger than the universe, because that's how it feels. See, that's why we have to see who God is. I have to step back and say, okay, this is true. It's not about denial. I'm walking through this difficult, dark time. That's reality for me. So let me step back and see how big God is. Because he's powerful enough, he's big enough to handle any problem that I encounter. He's stronger than any challenge that I might face. And we face some pretty tough challenges as individuals, as families, as a church, as a state, as a country, as a planet. And he's strong enough to take care of those. That's his point here. That's his intent in bringing up these questions. And then he talks about capacity, mental thinking. He says, who's smarter than God, is what he's basically saying. Are you? See, I mean, no hesitation. Are you smarter than God? No. See, right away, we no way. And yet, we live out our lives sometimes, and if we watched our lives from a distance, we might come to the conclusion that, I think Kurt does think he's smarter than God. Because he's doing things that God says don't do. And he's not doing some things that God says are great things to do. So when it comes right down to it, maybe I won't tell you and I'll shake my head. I'm not smarter than God. But look at my actions. Look at my life. Look at my choices. And then come to the conclusion of whether or not I think I'm smarter than God. See, to tell people about who he is, I need to see him. And I really need to see him for who he is. And guys, he's way smarter than all of us. He doesn't need any of us to tell him how to do things. We never do that, right? We never pray that way. He's smarter than any question we might ask. He's greater than any power on earth. The bottom line is there is none like him. There is no power that can match or equal his power. No one. In your notes, there's a statement. I can't remember if it's a fill-in or not, so let me give it to you. God is amazing because there's no one like him. Now, it's on a scale that it's unique from any other area of life. So take this the way it's meant. And I'm going to be in trouble, so pray for me this week. My wife is amazing. And she's amazing because I've come to believe that there's no one like her. There's no one that has the mix of all that she is. Now, she's a human being, so she has good and she has better. It's a mix. Over almost 30 years now of being married, it's the uniqueness of her. It's that there's no one like her. And all the things that God has shaped her to be and what she's becoming, and from her intellect to her physical beauty to her attributes to her skills to her heart for God and her love for people. And it's just this combination that doesn't exist anywhere else. And she's amazing because there's no one like her. And I'll spend the rest of my life exploring and learning and enjoying that. On a scale that just blows that away is God saying, there's nobody like me. There's nobody like me. I'm amazing. He is amazing because he's unique. There's no one that stands even close to him in many different ways. In the text this morning, he focuses on a couple things. The biggest one is just the magnitude, the majesty that you saw in the reading this week, the magnitude of his power and what he can do. There's no one like him. And he's truly amazing. He's truly amazing for being who he is. And so the response, and that I think is a fill-in on the notes. So what do? We honor him above all others. We honor him above all others. Honor should show up in all kinds of places in our lives. I should honor my wife. I should honor my parents. I should honor my dad for his service in the military. We should honor the people that have served. We have a flag. Several times throughout the years, we honor things that are connected to our country. We should honor the authority that God has placed in our lives. You following me? Honor is something that God has demonstrated to us and he's called us to give. But he reserves a special place of honor for himself, and he does not want to share it with anybody else. He wants to be at the top where he belongs, and he deserves to be there. So when I look at him and I say, man, you are amazing. You have no equal. My response needs to be, and so I put you in the place that you belong. I lift you up and I seat you in that place of honor. And I honor you. I honor you with my time. I honor you with my resources. I honor you with my abilities. I honor you in my relationships. I honor you in my thought life. I honor you in my heart. I honor you in all areas of my life because there is no one like you. And you deserve that place of honor in my life. And no one else deserves to be there. Right? No one, no thing, no nothing deserves to be in that place of honor that God needs to have in my life. That's how I respond to who he is. How powerful he is, that he's without equal. I honor him above all others. Look at verse 21. Look at verse 21. Let's pick it up there. I think this is where we picked up this morning in our reading. Do you not know, and have you not heard? Has it not been told from the beginning? This is not a new story. This has been around from the beginning of time. Have you not understood since the earth was founded? He, God, sits enthroned above the circle of the earth, and its people are like grasshoppers. He stretches out the heavens like a canopy. He spreads them out like a tent to live in. I am not a camper. I'm not a big fan of camping. I love family camp where we're together. The downside of family camp is that I have to set up a tent. I'm not disagreeing with God, but I'm not sure this is a good comparison because I struggle to set up a tent. That's not his picture here, is that God struggled to set up the universe. But the picture he gives us, it's like you just setting up a tent is what it looks like for God to go. And everything that we have ever discovered of our universe is in place. And even more, because we haven't discovered all of it. He just sets it up like you're putting two poles and a piece of canvas and some stakes. He just sets it up. And it looks better than my tent, by the way, when he sets it up. He brings princes, people in power, to nothing. And he reduces the rulers of this world to nothing. No sooner are they planted, no sooner are they sown, they're put into place. No sooner do they take root in the ground than he blows on them and they wither. They come and they go, and a whirlwind sweeps them away like chaff, like straw in the wind. So to whom will you compare me? Or who is my equal, says the Holy One? Lift your eyes and look to the heavens. Who made these? When you look up into the sky, I know it's hard to do in Sacramento, but when you get up in the mountains, you go to Yosemite, you go to family camp, you go to a place away from the lights of a city, and you look into the sky and you see it's impossible to count them. It is absolutely impossible to count them. And he says, just look up. Let's just start here. Just look up into the sky, and when you see that, who do you think made those? Where did those come from? Who put them in their place and their state? They're in this layout in the heavens. Who brings out that starry host one by one? And who calls them by name, each one by name? Because of his great power and his mighty strength, not one of them is missing. So not only is God amazing because he's without equal, but I propose to you that he's amazing because he's holding everything together. He's holding everything together. Now, I know that some of us are more into science and the stars and the universe and the pictures online that you can, the Hubble telescope, and you see these images. And for some of us, it's like, you know, Christmas. It's just amazing. Others of us, not, you know, not so much. It doesn't stir us as much, maybe as it should. But here's where it needs to move all of us. And here's what God's intent is in speaking through his prophet here. He says that the fact is, see, God's not looking for an argument. He's not looking for a debate. He's just telling us this is the way it is. I made these things. I put these things into place. I put them there. I know them. I'm holding it all together. And not a single one of them can burn out or go away or something happen to them without me knowing it. So here's how it needs to move you and me. If that's who God is in the universe, he doesn't change when he moves into my life. And I have things in my life that I just don't know what to do with or how to handle. My life can feel like it's coming apart. It's literally coming apart. My relationships, my finances, my housing situation, all of it, my health, it's coming apart. And I, for the life of me, cannot figure out how to hold it together and put it back together. But see, there is someone who can. And the reason he wants me to look up and see that, and he wants me to know that he knows every single one of those, and none of them are missing, they're all within his scope of understanding, is because then those same eyes of God that look to that universe look down to me, and I look into his face, and he says the same thing. He says, Kurt, I'm holding it together. I'm holding it together. I can hold that together. I can hold you together. Because that's who God is. That's what his power means to us as created beings. This display of the universe serves a purpose. The purpose it serves is for me to look at that and say, wow, God is powerful. He's majestic. He's huge. He's holding it together. Everything is where he wants it to be. Oh, I get it. He can hold my life together. He's aware of everything that I'm walking through, that I'm facing. If that's not too big for him, it's not beyond his power, then my life and what I face and what I walk through is not beyond his power and his ability to hold it together. A couple thoughts quickly. He sits on top. You see that? He's at the top. There's no one above him. He does what he wants with the powers of the world. Some of you were thrilled about the election. Some of you cried for a day. You know, but it doesn't, big picture, it didn't change God's power. God didn't go, oh, prop whatever. I wanted that one to pass, and I didn't want that one to pass. You know, he's not up there. He sits above all that. And everything that happens is within his power, within his control, within his sovereignty. And he's able to hold it together, even when things happen that you and I look at from our perspective and say, didn't see that coming. Don't know what to do with that. Don't know how I'm going to face that or fix that or correct that or meet that need. Never caught him off guard because he sits on top and he knows all that's happening. He's in control of all the powers. He lifts them up and brings them down. He knows every detail of his creation. And you know what? You are a part of his creation. If he knows those stars by name, I promise you he knows your name and he knows mine. And none of them are missing. None of them. The pictures are going, what happened to Pleiades, or I don't know the name of the star. What happened to the sun? Let me just do something that I, before I reveal any more of my foolishness. What happened to the sun that was circling around the earth? Where did it go? Well, we go, well, that's ridiculous. Well, but there's billions of them. There's billions of them, and he knows where everyone is. There are billions of people, and he knows each one of them by name as well. That's his power. He's holding everything together. My time doesn't allow me. I was going to read from Job 38 and 39. One of our songs this morning comes from this. If you did the daily reading this week, it's in there. So you've already read it, right? If you didn't do the daily reading, go back and read it. God has a conversation with a man, and he expands on what we see here in Isaiah 40. He goes into much more detail. Well, where were you? What about this? And God says, you know what? That's all me. That's all my doing. I'm holding all of this together. God is amazing because he's committed to life. He's committed to life. I had to take Greek mythology. Anybody else in school? Was it fifth grade, sixth grade, whatever you do? And I've seen the movies. I've seen the Wrath of the Titans and the Clash of those. You know, and the gods that we make up, all the gods and all the cultures of all time for all people, there's one thing that distinguishes the true living God from all of those ideas of God that we have come up with, and that is that God is about life. He's committed to life. What we see, the creation, all that we have revealed about him is about life and giving life, physical life and spiritual life. These other ideas of God's are about punishment and destruction and using their power to get what they want and to manipulate. God says, I'm here holding everything together. Why is he doing that? He's doing it ultimately for his glory, so that we would recognize who he is, but we do that through life that he gives us. And that's amazing to me, that this God of this amount of power is the same God that cares about me and holding my life together in this life and the next. He's amazing because he's committed to life. So what do I do? What's my response? The first response was what? To honor him. The second one, hold on to him. Hold on to him. See, our struggle is that we want to hold on to other things than God. Because again, we're not smarter than God, but we sometimes act like we are, like we think we are. And if I just had this, if I just had her, if I just had him, if I just had that job, if I just had this house, if I just had this, then I'll hold on to that and that will make me complete. That will make me satisfied. That will make me happy. If I could just be healed, if I could just get this fixed, then life would be good. And God says, hold on to me. I'll hold everything together. I'll make it all come out for good according to my purpose. But you got to hold on to me. You got to stop holding on to those other things. You need to honor me because of who I am and the place that I hold, and you need to hold on to me. You need to take that step that God's calling you to take, that step of faith. You need to risk for him. You need to become who God wants you to be because you're holding on to him, and he'll hold it together. He'll hold it together. Closing verses here, verse 27. Why do you say, O Jacob, and this is the audience that Isaiah is speaking to, the people of Israel, why do you complain? We can put our name in there. Why do you say, Kurt, why do you complain, Kurt and Becky? Why do you say that our way is hidden from the Lord and our cause is disregarded by God? He doesn't care. He's not paying attention. He's not aware. Don't you know, and haven't you heard, that the Lord is the everlasting God? He doesn't change. His power doesn't diminish. The creator of the ends of the earth, the one that put it all together and began creation, where we came from, that creator, the creator of the ends of the earth, he won't grow tired and he won't wear out. He won't become weary. And his understanding, no one can fully grasp. They can fathom it. Well, that's good to know. It's good to know those things about him. It's also equally good to know the next truth is that he gives strength to the weary. He gives strength to the weary. He increases the power of the weak. Even young people, youths, will grow tired and weary, and young men will stumble and they'll fall. They'll run out of power. They'll run out of stamina. They'll run out of strength. They'll run out of determination. They'll run out of conviction. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will fly, and they will run, and they won't grow weary. They'll keep running, and they will walk, and they won't be faint. They won't give up. They won't quit. Let me throw this out as the last point on your notes. God is without equal. God is holding everything together. And let me just suggest this morning, because I really believe this is God's intent, is that He is everything that I need. He is all that you need. He in His entirety, who He is, His power, His majesty, He is everything that I need. He knows me, He knows what I'm facing, and He has the power to help me walk through it. And the thing that God captured my heart with this week that I want to make sure penetrates our hearts is this idea that it never runs out. It never grows old. See, I'm 51 years old, and I'm experiencing aging. I'm experiencing the loss of muscle tissue and the inability to play softball and lift things. I can't even have my arm around my wife for more than 30 minutes. Where it's like, oh, ow, man. You know, and I'm experiencing my strength is going away. And I am sometimes guilty of imposing that on God. I said, I know, I see these things in the Bible. I see these miracles. I see these amazing things. But you know, things are just falling apart. Things are getting worn out. Maybe God's just tired. And God says, no, I don't get tired. My batteries don't drain. You know, we're in the age of batteries, right? My phone can't make it through a single day. God says, my batteries don't drain. They don't wear out. My strength does not diminish, even when He gives it away. And this is why He's so amazing. He's amazing because He gives His power away. He does the exact opposite of what most of us do. When we get power, when we get clout, when we get resources, when we have free time, aren't we prone to keep it for us and use it on what I want to use it on, for me? God, who has all power, never diminishing, gives it away. You need strength, Nate, this week? You do. You got some stuff coming up that you have no idea what you're going to face. You're going to need strength. But you know what? I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to give it to you. And I'm going to keep giving it to you. Because His power never runs out. It's never diminished. And He freely gives it away. Do you see that there? Do you see in this imagery as He conveys to these people that are saying, God, where are you and what are you doing? He says, I'm giving you strength. Don't you know I'm here to give you strength? So we honor Him. We hold on to Him. And finally, we put our hope in Him. We hope in Him and Him alone. You honor Him in your life. You honor Him in your life by putting Him in the place He needs to be. And then as you walk through whatever you're walking through, whatever I'm walking through, hold on to Him. Let go of these other false idols and things that have failed you in the past and they'll fail you in the future. Hold on to Him. And then when it comes right down to it, when there's nothing left, put your hope in God. Put your hope in God. Because of His power, because of who God is, He will never let us down. He will never fail us. He will never run out of what we need. Honor Him, hold on to Him, and hope in Him. Join me in prayer, please. Father, this morning has been a sincere and authentic attempt by a finite man to talk about who You are and the magnitude of Your majesty, the scope of Your strength, the power that you have, Your omnipotence. And it feels like I'm just scratching on a piece of metal, trying to leave a mark, trying to just uncover a little bit of what is there. But Your Spirit is here. And Your Spirit has taken not so much my words, but the words that we have recorded for us in this chapter, Your Word. And I know that it's Your heart for Him to take those words and penetrate into our hearts, penetrate into our thinking, penetrate into our life at a depth that causes us to stop and just say, wait a minute, what am I doing? Why am I living this way? Why am I looking to the things that I'm looking to for satisfaction or for significance or just for identity? I know it is your desire, God, to take the truth of your word and to penetrate to that level so that we are challenged. You're speaking to us to lift our eyes up off of ourselves and our own thinking and our own circumstances and look to the heavens and look to you and see you for who you are. God, you are majestic. You are unique in all that you are. And we need that in our minds and in our hearts, God. As we respond in these moments, we want to sing, God. We want to play instruments and we want to lift our voices and we want to sing to you as a gift, as our offerings to you, to tell you what you mean to us and how we need you and we love you and we recognize at least in part who you are. And we want you to move in our lives. We want you to show us who you are so that we can go from this place and we can shine for you. We can represent you. We can live for you. We can reflect who you are accurately to those in our life that need to see you. And I pray that you would receive our singing, our what we bring to you in that way, God, knowing that it's coming from our hearts that are filled with love and gratitude and appreciation. Father, we also give to you financially. We bring gifts that you've provided for us. You've been faithful in our lives. You don't always give us what we want and what we're looking for, but God, you have been faithful. And so we bring from that faithfulness, we bring gifts this morning as our offering to you, as another way of showing you that we love you and we want to please you. God, we want to know you. We want to know you for who you are. And so receive these gifts, receive these offerings that we bring to you this morning as well as a token of our appreciation and our obedience and our love for you, God. In Jesus' name, we come before you and we ask these things. Amen.